Radio.com, Tir na Sao from Ireland, Scottish Sovereigns on the Land.ning.com. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, 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 beyond. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, and welcome to Wolf Spirit Radio, everbeyondradio.com, and various other things. Let me just maybe just connect with Tir na Sao. There we go, bring that one up. And welcome, Tir na Sao, and welcome to People for People Radio in Scotland, and Tir na Sao in Ireland, Wolf Spirit Radio in Nevada, and Ever Beyond Radio, broadcasting out of good old London town. Well, today, anybody's actually listening to this live, you know, will know that this is hour four of what seems to be JP's radio, because last month he wasn't here, so this month he's going to be doing everything. So this is hour six, hour four of... this is hour five of a six-hour marathon of JP shows with just me in the helm, sitting in the saddle all day. But we didn't know that at the beginning, so welcome anyway. And today my guest is a returning guest, and we're going to talk about healing, and we're going to be talking about all sorts of things. Probably we're going to talk a lot about diet, because diet and healing are very, very closely, intimately connected. And we're also taking telephone calls, so like I say, you can connect with us by scrolling down. You connect on Skype by scrolling down the right hand side of the Wolf Spirit Radio webpage, the Wolf Spirit Listen, and if you scroll down on the right, you'll see a little blue Skype button underneath the call in when live, and so you can use that to call in when live, like now. Here's your excuse: you can call in and speak to me, and you can speak to our guest tonight, who is, I'm going to get it wrong, Shelyn Tetreau.
No, you did great.
Oh,
yeah, there you go. That was wonderful.
Hi, Shelyn, how are you?
I'm doing great. Getting over a little bit of a cold, but I'm on the upswing, so that's good.
Excellent.
I was concerned that I was going to sound really bad for the radio, but it's not too bad. So,
well, it's very interesting. A lot of people seem to have a cold at the moment. It is the change of season.
Exactly.
And it's maybe not exactly what people think. So, from your perspective, okay, Ms. Healer, you know, from your perspective, do you want to talk a little bit about colds and flu and the real nature of them?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'd love to. I know, I thought it was very good timing that I got this cold, because I did reflect on that for a little bit. And in Ayurvedic medicine, which is the science that I practice, when people, actually, let me go back a little bit. There is a reflection of the natural world within every single person. You know, we're not separate from nature, from existence. And at the juncture of the seasons is considered to be kind of a vulnerable time within us, because we're changing from, you know, just one set of weather patterns and, you know, temperature and that kind of thing, what the earth is doing. We're shifting from one sort of phase to another. And so the body tends to go a little haywire, in a sense. And so often during that vulnerable time, people will get a little cold. But it really is a way of just cleaning house. It's a way of the body to kind of clean house. You might get a little bit of a pathogen kind of coming over to say hello, but it just kind of boosts our immune system. You know, if you're able to rest and take care of yourself through that, you're really just cleaning house. So when you get all mucusy and everything, you're just getting the little ickies out of your body, to use a very scientific term. and it's fine. So the problem is that people don't stop and rest during these vulnerable times. So then a cold may become something a little bit more substantial. But it really is just a little message just to slow down a bit. And so if you can do that, then it ends up becoming not such a bad time, you know. My husband's a teacher, and he teaches high school. And he told me that a lot of the kids, you know, obviously have colds right now, but they're, you know, continuing to go to school and kind of pushing themselves, which is a bit unfortunate. It would be good if it could be encouraged for the young ones to kind of stay home and rest. So, anyway, how are you feeling? Do you have a cold?
I am in rude health. Totally rude health. It's not fair.
No, it's good. You had a purging earlier.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing. Because when I'm tired, guess what? I go and sleep. Hey, yeah.
Yes,
what a radical idea, you know. When I'm hungry, hey, guess what? I eat, you know.
Right. No, following the basics. It's good. You always go back to basics.
Yeah. We have to listen to our... And like you're saying, we have nature in us. We are nature. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people think that people aren't nature, you know, because somebody makes something, it's not natural.
Right.
You know,
but that's not the case.
It's not.
Right.
We are part of nature. We're like, you know, we're a process of nature. In
yes.
Everything is a process of nature.
Down to the last little plastic pen.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know, maybe the earth, like I think it was George Carlin, I think, or Bill Hicks, but I think it's George Carlin said, you know, what if the earth one day decided, I'd like to have some plastic? Yeah, I like plastic. Let's have an ocean cover.
We took care of that for him, didn't we?
Yeah,
sure, we'll do that for you.
So this is a real, you know, number one issue, right? We don't bloody look after ourselves.
Right.
We don't listen to the signals. We don't listen to the body when it says, I'm really tired, can I go to sleep? No, I got to work because boss will be angry or I'll lose my job.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Do you know what? You know, whenever people say, oh, I can't do that or I'll lose my job, I say, bloody good, do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Lose your job. Yeah. Lose your, you know, position in the death industry.
Right.
Go for it.
That would be amazing. I think it would be. if everyone did it at once. Just kind of looked at their three walls, actually, if you're in a cubicle, I guess it's three walls, and just is like, oh, I've had enough, you know, I'm done. But, listening to your own body is called inner wisdom or inner guidance, and we all have it. You don't need to study with anyone to learn that. You just have to learn to pay attention to your basic needs. But I guess in a way that's easier said than done. Because we're so darn distracted. So it can be difficult to listen to the quiet voice. Although the quiet voice can get louder and louder, and then it'll start to manifest in terms of pain. So people tend to respond and make changes when pain comes into the picture, I feel. You know, when it reaches that.
Yes, yes. With myself and the transformation of my diet has happened because of a severe pain, which is migraine. You know, and this food, which I've been discovering, you know, that I thought was my friend all my life, has really been poisoning me all my life.
Mm.
And so...
Is this bread?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so sad. I love bagels.
I know.
Bagels, my toroidal friends.
Yeah.
You know, not so much oil as donuts. Still nungy yummy. So
I do wonder about that. Mm-hmm. About most people's really negative reaction to eating refined flour, And I wonder if it's, in a way, if it's a temporary phenomena or not. I'm sure you have probably an understanding of the history of all of this, but because our grains have been, for the most part, modified, I'm sure in the UK and definitely in the US, even a lot of organic grains have been infected, in my opinion. And hopefully, I keep envisioning a movement where eventually our grains will heal. We'll actually be able to digest and eat them without getting sick and creating imbalance. But I think it's definitely a widespread problem right now. So maybe someday, JP, you can have your bagel again.
One day my bagel will come.
Do you still crave? So you crave them still?
I don't crave, but...
You don't crave?
Oh, no, here's the thing. Oh, sorry. He's still there. Good. Sorry about that. It's a long story. I've just rearranged my studio a little bit.
Don't know where this and that is.
Well, my microphone is sticking right out of the desk here, and I keep banging into it when I'm moving my hands, you know, because I talk with my hands.
You have to mount it from the ceiling.
That's one interesting position. It could
hang upside down.
Yeah, some people do have, you know, a studio. Yeah. Yeah, the studio mic that comes down from the ceiling is a very good idea.
You can flail your arms around.
Find the joist, yeah. All right, I'm completely...
So you don't have
cravings. So, yeah, here's the thing. All right, so my process over the last few months, because I've had these migraines, and when I was eating like rich food, and then eventually it got down to when I was eating yeasty food, and I stopped it, and things started to clear up a bit. And then we got into pine oil. My girlfriend started collecting pine from local trees and making a pine oil tea, which contains a tiny amount, which is all you need, of turpentine. And that's got an antifungal effect.
Yeah.
So, and we've been talking about how fungus is this, you know, yeast is a form, it's in that sort of fungal family. It does similar things, and it eats, and it's necrotic.
Right.
It eats dead things to process them back into elements for the ground, you know. It makes compost, so... That's what its function is. But it also, at the beginning of its life, when you add it to sugar, it does this whole carbon dioxide thing, which then, you know, we use in food to make bread and beer. Except that it also makes a poison that builds up. And I think that's what I've been suffering from, is that build up of poison. But also... that it makes colonies inside your body, and it then influences your body, says, oh, get me some of that, I need some of that, I'm really feeling hungry right now. And this constant you know, it's like having an annoying little child saying, I'm hungry. And that's what a craving is, and it's not me, it's the thing that is living inside me. And now I know the difference between me and the thing that lives inside of me.
So when I say craving, you think, no, it's not me, it's the nung that's craving it.
Yeah, because now I realize that, you know, I can have, and I keep saying it, I can have a bar of chocolate sitting on my table for weeks. Not kidding, for weeks. There's, you know, an open packet,
not ready to go,
ready to eat, and there you go, chocolate, nice, but not today.
Yes.
And if you can get to that level, then you're on top of it.
I think, sorry, go ahead.
You know, I was just saying, I haven't conquered it, I haven't deleted it, I haven't killed it, it's still there, it's my friend instead of my enemy.
Right, I completely agree, and I use that in the same way. It's just it's a way to kind of witness yourself, you know. Like, I got into a habit recently of eating quite a bit of ice cream. So my ice cream is your bagel. You know, it's kind of the equivalent, I guess you could say.
Tell me all about it.
Your bagel is my ice cream.
Oh, no, no. Ice cream as well.
add that to the list.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you see, my girlfriend is German, and she likes, you know, they're really into sweet stuff, and she has all this chocolate, and she's always bringing chocolate and ice cream, and she brought, and, you know, so I have to have a little bit. So I try, you know, here's your big bowl of ice cream, and I have this little bowl of
That's
ice cream.
Thing.
Yeah,
exactly.
You just have to, you know, it's like, without being in complete sort of rock hard, you know,
deprivation
and denial.
Yeah.
But without feeding the craving, because it's the greed and the craving, they all go together, I think. It's
right.
Like
I mean,
need.
You have to, you can ask yourself, okay, how am I feeling before I eat this, while I'm eating it, and after it? You know, like, am I feeling some kind of extreme emotion before I'm eating this? And then after, do I feel kind of lethargic? You know, it's kind of, you're kind of like being pulled by something as opposed to being at the head of the pack, you know, instead of leading the way. You're kind of being dragged along if you do have a craving. And I think some people think that they can't get away from that, but you can.
Yeah, that's the hopelessness thing. And
oh, yeah.
No, and this is what we're here for. We're here to offer hope to those poor nunged out people who have been, you know, nunged and all into the corner, into the gutter.
Yeah, I have to say, I get pretty inspired. I mean, you know, I've been through it enough times. You know, there's practices that I do to really help keep away from getting caught in the whole craving train. But I get inspired by watching my clients and patients agree to kind of to go on that journey. And I just keep in touch with them during it. You know, I'm like, you might have some struggles. It might go easy. Just let me know, you know, and each person's, story is a little bit different and unique, and it's, certainly interesting. And then when you see them come out the other side, calmer and without that strong attachment to a certain food or a certain way of eating, it's really encouraging. It's definitely encouraging. So,
and I, you know, I have to say that there is another side to it. You know, you do get to the other side.
You
and
do.
It is a much, how can I say it? It's a place where, how can I, it feels like your skin fits again.
Yes.
I don't know how else to put this. But
no, I agree.
Yeah. Oh, there we are.
You're more established in yourself.
Yes.
Yes. Svastha.
Yeah.
That's the state of health in Ayurveda. I'm gonna keep throwing in these words, JP. You encouraged me the last time.
Good, good. Can you reflect that word again?
Svastha. Svastha. To be established in oneself. It's the foundation of health, of the state of health.
Right.
Yeah.
Svastha. So, let's all work towards getting that state of being. So let's, like I said, you know, we talk about diet because, you know, Hippocrates?
Well, we're physical beings. So.
Yeah.
What's that?
It was, I can't remember one of them. I think it was Plato or Socrates or one of those fellas said, oh God, that's so useless. I can't even remember who said it. Anyway, let food be your medicine and medicine be your food.
Well, that's a sutra in Ayurveda as well.
Well, there you
food,
go. So you guys said it. The Ayurveda said it first.
Said it first. No, I'm just kidding. Well, that's kind of. Are you still there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm just
okay,
muted. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of one of the things that I would really love callers to contribute is if anyone has, you know, a healing tradition that they're really acquainted with, and there's, I'd love to hear similarities because Pluto's or Socrates mentioned food as being the foundation, you know, and so does Ayurvedic medicine. There's a recognition there. I'm just curious, you know, I'd love to hear the similarities between the traditions because that alludes to this information coming from a broader picture. which I find fascinating. For sure.
So, yeah, by the way, I know people have been calling in all day, so except when I ask them. But if you would like to call in, we have all these lovely
numbers.
So don't
ask them.
Yeah. Don't call in, and we won't answer your calls, and we won't tell you anything. Basically, Shailene is here to discuss health and any questions that you might have about health, but looking at it from an Ayurvedic medicine point of view, which is a very ancient tradition. Do you want to give a quick nutshell about the main differences between Western medicine and what you're dealing with here?
One main difference is that there's a recognition of imbalance in the body, mind, and spirit that can happen well before a major disease manifests. Also the recognition in Ayurveda, which is a traditional science from India, that, like I said earlier in the show, we're not separate from the natural world or nature. We're simply a part and a reflection of it. And we're made up of five elements, you know, for example. The body and mind and spirit is looked at holistically rather than mechanically or in parts or segments. It's looked at together. For instance, if someone's having issues with their liver, there's probably also going to be some underlying issues of anger as well. So, you know, the emotional state of a person is considered, the psychological state of a person is considered, as well as their physical state. Imbalances in digestion and sleep, those are looked at very thoroughly in Ayurvedic medicine. And the goal is to try to really help a person before anything really serious manifests, although there's definitely room for people who are experiencing a deeper imbalance, you know, such as high blood pressure or something like that, or gallstones or diabetes, that can be worked with in Ayurveda as well. So, is that a nutshell?
That's a good nutshell. So, you know, there are things that kind of gather and collect in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they gather and collect like gallstones or kidney stones or pineal mm-hmm. gland calcification. Has mm-hmm. this always happened? Is this a modern phenomenon, or is this something that is like that has been? What I'm saying is that this style of medicine has been around for a long time, thousands of years.
Yeah.
So it will have an overview of what diseases, you know, trends of diseases and things like that, won't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I think there are some diseases that came from living in modern times. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do have new substances that are around that our bodies have to try to interact with. There's a lot of endocrine disruptors out there, you know, in our lovely plastics, for example, that's creating all sorts of interesting imbalances. But interesting and not fun. But there's a really broad recognition of buildup in the body called AMA, A-M-A. And that is a collection of improperly digested food and thoughts, or food, thoughts, and emotions.
Isn't that interesting that it's the same as the American Medical Association, is also an unusual collection of weird thoughts and sludge.
We were just touching antennae because I thought it, but I didn't say it. Actually, I do have a lot of respect for a lot of people in the medical profession. I just don't feel strongly about the institution, but
yeah, I have to be because we have doctors and people in our audience here, and
yes.
they we have sometimes expressed negativity towards certain members of the medical profession in the same way that, you know, some police people beat people. You know, and most police people are very great citizens and good people, and there for the right reasons, you know.
Right. That whole deal. Yet, our antennae were touching, so I appreciate that.
It was just the way you described it as a sludge of things. It's like, all right, okay. Yeah. So anyway,
I know.
Amma is this yes. material that is a kind of on
sticky.
Many levels. It's like yes. astral and physical and mental stuff.
Yes, yes. It accumulates. Some folks in the field don't feel it's actually physical, and some do. I personally feel that it's both physical and immaterial. It's both combined. A sticky, gooey substance that can be moved out of the body. But you have to go through it. You can't go around it, you know?
What does that mean?
You have to go through the process of getting this ama out of your system. You have to go through the discomfort to a certain degree. You know, you can't avoid it. You can't avoid...
And do you think that it is the embodiment of the avoidance of discomfort in the first place?
It could be.
Like ice cream.
Yeah, sure. That could be part of it.
You know, because like... And
well, that
here's
could
the
be
thing,
part
you know, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but, you know, because... you know, a lot of kids who have been abused say that the person who abused them buys them ice cream afterwards. So you've got this
yeah.
weird, twisted connection with this sweet stuff.
Right.
Dark stuff, sweet stuff, you know.
Sure.
And so there's, you know, this is reminding me of this, you know, it's the pleasure that we take to avoid the pain.
Yeah, and it's temporary. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that just reminds me of kind of the three causes of disease. Are one of them is misuse of the senses, so that may fall under that. Also, failure of the intellect, and one might be you simply don't know how to be in balance with the natural world. You simply just don't know, you know, you forget to listen to your inner wisdom. And some people know that something's bad for them and do it anyway. That's certainly going to cause imbalance. And then the third cause is the motion of time. So since we all, to some degree, believe in a somewhat linear time-space reality, we've agreed to that for now, at least, the motion of time simply will create aging, so that's in a way unavoidable and necessary. But we can actually accelerate that by moving our mind, moving our thoughts faster than necessary, and not allowing any stillness of the mind. So that was a little bit of a tangent, but it just made me think of sort of these main causes of disease of the body. So, you know, any kind of addiction or craving for ice cream or sugar could be seen as misuse of the senses and failure of the intellect, I think.
Oh my God, my intellect's just failed. I need some ice cream.
Yeah. you need another sip of tea. Have you had any food? I'm all concerned for you, JP.
Oh, that's fine. I've had some... I made what do you call them? You call them French fries. We call them chips here, but chips.
Oh,
are,
or crisps.
No.
Crisps are potato chips, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Got
but
it right. I should know that. I've lived in Scotland for
yeah.
6 months.
No, but I've had that's chips. Late. I have chips, which are what you call fries.
That's right.
Thick chunks of potato fried in the oven. Anyway, sounds delicious.
Well, now is the season for root vegetables. For
yes.
Sure.
Definitely, it's get the old beetroots out. Oh, God, I hate beetroot. Anyway.
Well, you know, you were talking about, you were talking about your reaction to food.
Yes.
So you were eating breads, but there was something else that was giving you trouble. Greasy foods? What was it?
Yes, it was over-rich foods. So, yeah, the heavy greases.
Oh, I see.
But I think... It's a compound, you know. I think that there's, yeah. I don't want to go there, but I know I have to. It's dairy sensitivity now.
Uh-huh.
You know, being sensitive to having too much milk in a day.
Yeah.
Like drinking
yeah.
too much tea or coffee.
Sure.
I've actually started drinking coffee again, which is a bit unfortunate because I haven't got any fresh. I've got some really old coffee beans in there. But anyway, it's still the nice taste. I like the nutty taste of it. It's actually the smell of it is better. Anyway, long story.
Well, you know how there's qualities, how we talked about there's qualities in nature that are reflective in every person, and that's the same for food. So there's qualities in food. So coffee will have like a light, sharp, mobile quality to it. A little bit of a kick there, you know, kind of gets things moving. Whereas dairy is cold, even if you heat it up, but it's cold and heavy and sweet. It can be nourishing if you can digest it. But there's ways to balance these qualities by the way you spice them or cook certain food. So, you know, milk is really not regarded as, you should not really have that cold, for example. It's always heated up and spiced in Ayurveda cooking. And
So like even in, you buy an ice cream in India, a kulfi, and it's got, what spice is it? It's
probably cardamom.
Yeah, it's got cardamom spice in it. It's not pure, what can I say? It's not pure sweet stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a balancing factor in it that is like, oh, I can eat loads of this without being sick.
Except you don't, because you give a small portion.
Exactly, you get a small portion. It's very tasty.
Very tasty.
That's what it's about. It's the prana. It's the taste of food. Do you want to talk about prana and living food and dead food and stuff?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we could do that. Well, prana is the vital essence, the vital energy. Inherent in all things, and essentially you could say fresh food, food that is not canned, food that hasn't been in the fridge for several days, food that you just pick from the vine or the tree or whatever, it has the most prana in it. So it's very vital. It creates a kind of if you eat a lot of foods, like people who eat raw food only, like raw foodists, they have a lot of prana in their systems, a lot of vitality. Now, that's fine, and I actually definitely respect people that eat only raw, but there is another side to that. Prana is so light and mobile and uplifting that you have to look at the other side. What can you use, or you do need something to contain and hold the prana. So if you have too much prana within your body, too much of that uplifting, enthusiastic movement, you're going to be up in the clouds, not contained, not able to kind of bring it in and make use of it. And I'm speaking in general, I'm speaking generally here, but so prana is very useful. It's necessary. It's a life force. It comes in through the breath as well. Pranayama means breath work. So that's a way also to work with this vital life force. I think it's called qi in Chinese medicine, but that's, I don't have much knowledge of Chinese medicine. So you have to think about, okay, what's going to balance the prana? There's going to be this thing, there's a quality called ojas. And ojas is our innate, inherent immunity and strength within our body. It kind of holds everything together within us. It helps us to remain physical and be here and be grounded and have strength behind us. And then the third, there's prana, ojas, and then there's also this other force, life force called tejas, which is akin to transformation. So we need a transformative quality within us as well. So there's prana, tejas, and ojas. The three kind of work together within us really beautifully. And you can have imbalances in either of those. So that's prana. And then I added two other things to that. What's your understanding of prana?
From what I can understand, it's the same as organ and chi and ki and all those other words that sound like the same thing. and love and gravity and actually I'd be interested. Yeah, I'm interested to hear what the traditions say about gravity, because we're learning stuff about gravity that is not what we're taught in school. You know, like I was talking about, that gravity is in fact a pressing down force.
I heard someone just speaking about this, and I can't remember who.
This is the understanding that comes from the black ops. You know, these devices that levitate. You know, they're real. You know, they have a plasma glow around them. We used to call them UFOs, and we're now discovering that they're all, you know, not exactly one of ours because they don't let us have them. But you know, they're people like us. You know, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That they work on the principle that if you rotate electromagnetic fields, you create a gravitic generation, a wave that comes out of it. That pushes the ground away, and that's how they lift up. So by understanding that gravity doesn't suck us down, that it is a pressing force, we are now able to understand how a UFO can work, and they become an IFO, obviously, but or a KO. KO. KFO. Sounds like a chicken. Anyway, meanwhile, back on Planet Human, we've got all these different humors inside us, that what you'd call these humors. But you were talking about chi. Now, from what I'm guessing, that the same way that we have different levels of matter, like solid, liquid, gaseous, there are different levels, dimensions of chi. So there's I imagine a chi that's like butter, and then there's a chi that's like oil, and then there's a chi that's like gas, like butane. Is that correct?
I actually don't know too much about chi. What I know is prana, tejas, and ojas, and so that this is when a caller should call in who knows traditional Chinese medicine and can explain chi. And let us know, does it relate to prana or not, in their viewpoint?
I'm sure it has to, because, you know, like I was saying, that there's seven of everything, and there's seven of everything combines, so, and three of everything certainly combines, so there would be three forms of energy. So let's do a bit of translation, if that's possible. So give me the first, the one that would be the chi of the prana of initiation, of starting things. What would that be called?
Well, it's actually called prana, just prana or prana vayu. So that's when, this is just coming to me without thinking too much about it.
Prana vayu.
Prana vayu.
Mm-hmm. Vayu, right.
The movement of a physical being, physical person, existing in the world and taking in the outer world through their senses.
Okay. And then what would the next one be? Prana.
Prana vayu. So then there's another movement, another vayu, which is taking in, after you've taken an experience in through the senses, you then absorb it into the body. You absorb it deeper into the body, and that's samana vayu. Then, once you've taken it in, and this can be related to food as well. So, food would be, you take in through the sense of taste, you know, the process of eating. So, samana vayu is taking in, absorption. And then the body circulates. So, that's viyana vayu. And then the energy of, after you've circulated your initial external experience, after you've circulated it through the body, then you put it to work. So that's udana vayu. That's the vayu of action. And then finally, apana vayu, which is the action, the motion of illumination. So there's sort of a linear process happening there.
So that's like a five-stage process.
Yes.
So, and it's the process of energy moving into matter.
Yes, I would say. Yeah. That's definitely one way of looking at it. moving it into matter and assimilating it into the body and creating further experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So, still no callers. Very interesting. Everybody was saying, why am I ill? So, have I answered everybody's question? Do you know why you're ill yet?
Oh, I wanted to say, I listened to a little bit of your, the last broadcast that you had.
My rant.
Well, no, I actually am trying to learn more about your work, the Seven Ray work, and I thought it was interesting. No, it was a rant? No, it didn't sound like a rant to me. It sounded like people were calling in, unless it was a recording.
No, no, that was live.
No, you were reading their, you were reading their, the Seven Rays. You're doing the Seven Ray readings on using people's, just hearing people's voices.
Yes.
Which I think is fascinating. And why seven? What's seven? What does seven have to do with your work?
Seven.
Because I'm just learning about your work. I don't know too much about it.
All right. Well, this is from the Himalayan tradition, and it's...
Okay, so then there's definitely... There's got to be some... I'm losing my words here. There's got to be some similarities.
Yes.
Yes.
One of the things that it teaches is this thing called the law of correspondences. Really, what this is a kind of meta-discipline.
Okay.
It's the discipline from which everything else is derived or understood. So, for instance... All right, so what are the seven rays? The seven rays are everywhere when you pay taxes, you know. They are the mechanism of the universe. They are the manifestation in right. So you've got you're just describing a five-stage process.
Right.
You can break the process down into seven, probably. You know, some of these one of those five will be a combination of two. And in the same way, you can break, you can coalesce the five into a three, and then finally into a single action, you know, an intent that then breaks down into three, then into five, then into seven, and then da da da. You see?
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way, you know, in the Tao Te Ching, it says, you know, the Tao begat the one begat the two begat the three, and then the three begat the 10,000 things.
Yeah, so this is similar to the philosophy that Ayurveda follows.
Yeah, so it's
Sankhya philosophy.
That's right. So it's like it's the meta discipline behind it. Mm-hmm. So the seven rays each have a quality, and the way I put it is that say you've got a piano in front of you. And what a piano is a machine that can produce a vibration that can that goes to the lowest of what a human can hear to the highest of what a human can hear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's arranged in groups of 12, right? And these are called the chromatic octave. But the melodic octave that we use for music is seven. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a reason. Because we relate to seven in many, many ways. Mm. And so in our world, all right, here we go. We have 7 days. We have seven notes in the musical scale, as I was saying. We have seven colors in our spectrum. We have, there are 12s, but there's also sevens. And they all relate. Mm. And it's a stage of understanding. That the closer it gets to the one, the more divine it becomes.
Mm.
And so you could say that the 12 is the expression of the outside, the exoteric, and the 7 is the expression of the inner form that makes up the 12 through combination, and that's the esoteric.
Mm.
And all of the teachings of how those all fold into themselves to become three and one, those are all part of the esoteric world. Does that make sense?
It does. It makes me think of, so how does it relate to the body? Is the body described in certain, like are there seven rays of the body, or is it the seven chakras?
Yes.
The seven chakras.
It cuts many ways, right? So there's seven rays, Mm-hmm. And that means that basically each ray defines a kind of material. It has a quality to it. And it has a color. It has a mood. It has a smell. It has a key, like a key of music. So, for instance, if I'm going to write a romantic piece of music, I will choose the key of C-sharp minor. That's Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. It's Because by the Beatles. You know, it's just beautiful. Okay? I wouldn't write a rousing melody that I wanted to, you know, arouse supporters and things like that. That wouldn't be C-sharp minor. I'd use a C for that. You see? So each key has its function. And its mood and its quality. So the keywords for each of the seven rays is ray one is will, ray two is love, ray three is intelligence. Okay, those are the three, and they correspond with the red, will, love, blue, intelligence, green.
Interesting.
Okay, so those are the three rays, and out of the three come the four. So, like red and green, they form yellow and orange. You know, so that's where all these other colors come from, by the combining. And so there's primary and secondary. So there's primary rays, and that's the one, two, and three. And so many things also correspond with one, two, and three, and each one will take a position, one, two, or three. And so if you know that, and you're presented with three things, then you know which one to speak to, which one to relate to, and which one to reason with.
Interesting.
Makes sense?
It makes me, yeah, it does. I because I'm a somewhat visual person, I was just visualizing these rays emanating from the body, and then those rays emanating different colors. And then I thought about the rainbow body, how there were some monks that were able to transcend themselves into this crystalline rainbow body, and I wonder if it's related or not. I'm not sure.
Right. Well, how does that work? The rainbow body.
Do you know the rainbow body? Are you familiar with?
I'm sorry?
Are you familiar with these monks? I'm sorry, I know.
Yeah, I've heard about this story.
I know you're in the middle of a fry.
yeah.
I'm like, JP, your TikTok.
I was in the kitchen stirring a pot of rice.
Yes. Oh, my little baby girl's coming through. So if you hear a little baby voice, she's just coming through really quick.
Sweetheart.
She's going upstairs with her.
Give her a good hug. We're going to take a break in a minute, so you can give her a hug. I'll put a nice tune on. Tonight's tunes are all by Sean Ann Fuse, who's this a member of Simon's Connecting Consciousness group from the States, and she's got this lovely jazz voice and makes beautiful. I really like it. Really,
yeah, it's
honestly
great.
So I'm very pleased. You know, so it's a nice kind of blending of energies here tonight. So okay, so right. Well, I think we'll deal with Lyron's question in a little minute, which is about calcifications, and we'll talk about those after the break, I think. Now, where were we just before that? You know, I was stirring my rice, and
I know.
So where were you?
Well, I was talking about, you were talking about the rays, and so I had this visual of the rays emanating from, let's just say, the solar plexus, the heart, and the third eye.
Right.
And then those rays emanating again. And then it made me think about the rainbow body, in like a crystalline rainbow body that is formed, that certain monks have been able to transcend to.
Right, yeah, so this is the energetic light body.
They travel. What's
yes,
that?
This is the energetic light body, or the, what do they, well, they call it the rainbow body, or the etheric double, or the etheric body, or the energy body, or the light body, you know, there's loads of different words for it. But essentially, it's the light inside the physical body that is mm-hmm. like a physical light.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, it's light. It's spiritual light that has been brought down into this world,
mm-hmm.
and emanating out of the chakras. That so it's like I suppose in one way, if you have a whole bunch of dirty windows, mm-hmm. and you're trying to shine a torch through them,
mm-hmm.
And you know the light's not getting through. So by cleaning them using spiritual practices and techniques, it allows that light to shine through from the other side. Now, relating that to the rays, it's not exactly all right. So it's called seven rays because there's that's what they are. They are qualities of light. They are bands of light in the same way they have bands in the spectrum of light in the rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have bands in the rainbow. That's what I mean by a band.
Right.
And it's also the same as a wave band that you have on the radio. You know, you have long wave, medium wave, you know, VHF. They're all wave bands because they're, mm-hmm. they go from one frequency to another. So light goes from 600 nanometers to 400-something nanometers. You know, it's a very narrow band.
The visible spectrum.
The mm-hmm. visible spectrum. It's a very right. narrow band. It's one mm-hmm. octave, you know. And so it has the it's got your do re mi fa sol la ti do,
right? It's mm-hmm. interesting,
and that corresponds to red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and there's a correspondence,
mm-hmm.
And it's harmonic, because when I won't go into it exactly because it's
yeah,
mathematical.
No, I understand, yeah. Yeah, you understand.
But there's a harmony about that, so. Let's carry on after the other side of this. I'd like to play some more of Shauna's music, and I'm just gonna. Oh, where did I put it? That's like, oh, there it is in the tunes. In
yes,
tunes.
You don't want me to sing. Trust me.
Really, really.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, that wouldn't go over well.
I bet you play a drum.
Oh, I would play a drum if I played something. Yeah.
Interesting.
I would play a drum.
Yeah. That's the seventh ray way, you see. Okay. So this track is called The World Turns. Huh.
The world turns.
finishing.
Thank you
song.
Very much. The World Turns by Sean Ann Fuse, and it was Doug Auld definitely who was the co-creator of that first track that I played in Simon's show. So welcome back to Ever Beyond, and my guest is Shailene Tetreault with her little baby girl.
Sorry about that.
No need to apologize for being, you know, being a mother, and little child there has her own cycle. So if you are you able to discuss?
Oh yes.
Yeah, okay. So here's the thing. Many people suffer from what we call calcification. And people have spoken about calcification of the pineal gland, but there are other forms of calcification. There are forms of calcification of the liver, of the kidneys, of the, you know, different bladders, of you know, bladder stones, gallstones, kidney stones, stones everywhere, arthritis, all this stuff. What is it? How does it form? Why does it form? And then we'll move on from there.
Yeah, well, those are huge questions.
I know, big questions. Let's
yeah,
go.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And to the person who posted the question, thank you for doing so. And everything I say, also realize that you're not being treated right now. So just take that with a grain of salt.
Or a kidney stone.
Yes, exactly. So calcification would be, you know, a hardening, obviously, within the body. Within the soft tissue of the body or an organ. And in Ayurveda, each of the organs of the body will often relate to a specific set of emotions. So often when a person has like crystalline hardening in a certain area of the body, there's a couple of reasons why that may occur. One could be their karmic path. So they're carrying forth this weakness in their system from their lineage of lives. So that could be one. And I'm kind of putting things in a nutshell here. Another reason could be over years and years of improperly digesting food and thoughts, and really importantly here, emotions. Ama begins to form, which we talked about earlier, and will relocate and get lodged in specific tissues and create deeper and deeper imbalances. So if a person has a history of experiencing a lot of fear, and fearful stress over time, and also overworking the body or overworking the mind, really pushing oneself, coupled with fear, could be trauma as well, then calcification can happen in the kidneys. But there are different types of calcification depending on a person's constitution. So kidney stones would be treated differently depending on who that person is as an individual, you know, what their constitution is. I don't know if we talked about this the last time I was on, but there are people who are more airy and etheric. There are people who are more fiery and kind of motivated and fiery and tend to have a temper. And then there are people who are very slow moving. That's my baby again, sorry. People who are very slow moving and grounded. So those three people will have different manifestations of kidney stones. And they will have different symptoms. So one person may have very dull, achy pain associated with the kidney stones. They could get quite large and hard to dislodge, hard to move. Another person may have really tiny, sharp little crystalline formations in their kidneys with a lot of pain, like really debilitating pain, and scant urine. And then another person may have a lot of bleeding and inflammation, a lot of heat, a lot of blood in the urine. So there's three totally different ways that a kidney stone can manifest. So it really depends on who that person is and what their experiences have been. Some ways of working with that could be you have to look at a person's daily routines and see, okay, on a really basic foundational level, how is their food and how is their sleep and how are their practices throughout the day? Are they serving them or are they creating it further imbalance? You know, is a person drinking soda all day, which would definitely contribute to kidney stones, or not? Is a person getting enough rest so the kidneys are getting their time at night to do their proper functioning and rejuvenation? So you have to look at maybe what some of the causes might be, the long-term causes of kidney stones. Again, that's going to be different for each person. And then some of the treatments might be simply rest, and then very specific herbal formulas that have lithotropes in them, so herbs that will break up kidney stones, and then other herbal formulas that have diuretic qualities in them will help move water, so help move fluids through the kidneys to help move the stones. Other treatments might be warm compresses over the kidneys on the back to help create dilation in the kidney. So it's, you know, there's many different things to look at there. And then long-term approach after the person is able to rid themselves of the kidney stones is make sure you're hydrating enough, make sure you're resting and nourishing enough. You go back to the basics. And then there would be, you know, very specific foods, like a lot of demulcent quality foods would probably be very important. And you could do like seasonal kidney flushes to make sure that these stones don't build up again. So I hope that is a clear enough answer.
That's it. Yeah, it's
a lot to tackle. That's definitely a deeper imbalance. So that would definitely be some, you know, the person would need to be under the care of an Ayurvedic physician for that.
Yeah, definitely. So, but these are conditions that are like a, what's the word?
But fear. Fear is definitely,
yes.
You know,
the base. It's a manifestation of constant energetic intent placed in one direction only. Is
absolutely.
What I'm trying to find the right word for what I just said, but do you understand what I'm saying?
That's an imbalance. So
yeah.
If it's going in one direction only, as opposed to flowing through the body properly in all the proper directions, which we talked about in the beginning, the five vayus, then imbalance will occur. Yeah, that funneling into one organ. This, you know, this organ that just gets very depleted or tired and. But fear is definitely associated with the kidneys and the bladder.
Do you know what
so
I was thinking?
A big one.
And this is an unusual... I have these unusual thoughts. You know how you can squeeze your eyes shut?
Do we squeeze our kidneys shut?
And is there a place
absolutely.
Where we keep squeezing and that they don't relax? And, you know, can this be a condition that causes something like this?
Well, it's adrenal fatigue. That's what comes. That's the Western word. And it's funny. I'm working with a patient right now who just told me the other day. She says, "I realize that I'm squeezing." I'm like, "What are you squeezing?" And she pointed to her back. I said, "Oh, that's where your kidneys are." And she says, "Well, you used to have adrenal fatigue." And I'm like, "Yes, because you're squeezing your adrenals." She goes, "I squeeze when I need to get more energy." And so your adrenals kick in when you're in fight or flight, right? They're responsible for your fight or flight response. So what you have to do is you, with love, you go to that area of the person's body and you calmly work with it. I use Marma point work, so just gently working on specific points. You just meet that person there and you're like, "Would you like to come here instead?" You're here now, but if you want to come here, you can, because this is your more natural state and you've been here before at some point. Bring warmth to the area and you can definitely squeeze your kidneys. You can squeeze your liver. You know, you do it with your patterns, your patterning, your patterns of emotions. Absolutely.
That's fantastic. Listen, Shilin, we're starting to get a bit of breakup on your signal. So can I just call you back?
Uh-oh.
One second? Are you on the Wi-Fi?
Yes.
Okay.
No, I'm connected to Ethernet.
Okay. Okay, give me a second. So we'll just call her back and just refresh that call here. And she'll be with one. There we go.
Hello.
So, oh, that's lovely. Okay, so...
Is that better?
I think so. You know, you can hear my reflection. Long story. Shilin, Tetro, we are here. We were talking about how the pineals or how things crystal, and we were talking about, you know, squeezing our kidneys shut. So, and now I'm trying to relax my kidneys.
I know, I'm right. It's like, breathe into your kidneys, and they're higher up than you think. They're not in your low back, they're higher up.
Yeah, it's right? It's that kind they're of like, it's a funny feeling.
The bottom
it's
of your rib.
Bottom yeah. of my ribs.
Yeah, they're at the bottom of the ribs there. They're not in your low back. A lot of people think they're in your low back, but they're up higher. They're right at the bottom there. So if you can bring your breath all the way down to the lowest part of your lungs and rib cage, can open up, stop the squeezing. Ginger compress works well as well for that.
Okay, so it's funny, we're getting a bit of delay on your signal here.
Okay.
That's funny. We shouldn't be getting that. But we are. Maybe there's. I'm just going to close down a couple of pages here. It might be just Google doing that to me because I typed in calcification into Google Images. I wouldn't recommend it. It's not nice, especially if you're eating. Don't eat and look at this page. It's like pathological medical conditions. It's worse than the news.
Yeah, they always show the first. They always show the worst photos for those, you know, the worst examples of kidney stones or whatever. Is there still a delay?
See, what's happening is your voice gets chopped up a bit, and then we do end up with a little bit of a delay. So don't worry about if I don't respond for a second or two. Just I'll be here.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think of calcification as armoring, as a type of inner armoring. And also we also have to consider that it may also be factors outside of ourselves. I mean, we do have a lot of toxicity that we have to metabolize right now, so that's just a little bit of an extra challenge to consider.
All right, so someone who's out. And non-841 has three kidneys, two on the left and one on the right. Lucky you. Well, there you go.
Oh, interesting.
So working from the kidneys, that's one place where fear and squeezing, who'd have thought? I'd never had that thought before, and there's your patient saying, they feel like... Okay.
Yes.
So we do... tense up in our internal organs, and if you keep a muscle tense all the time, it's going to lock up eventually. It's just going to it's going to calcify that way, isn't it?
It's called the pain spasm cycle when a muscle locks up, and the muscle will tense up. It'll spasm. It'll create pain, which will cause the muscle to tighten up even more because it's feeling pain. You know, it's hard to relax when you feel pain, which will cause the muscle to tighten up more. So it's a vicious cycle. So you have to figure out ways to break that cycle. And sometimes, you know, simply because I practice therapeutic massage as well. So when you start to work on the muscle, you bring this awareness to it, like, oh, it's okay. You actually don't have to keep going in that direction. You can come the other way. See, it feels a little bit better. So you put a little bit of pressure on the muscle. You bring blood back to it. You bring vitality and life back to it. And it eventually will start to relax and let go again. So it's kind of reversing a process. And it's just taking that moment of pause. I think in most healing, it's that moment of pause when you start to change a direction that healing can really start to happen.
And this is, I think, a lot of factor in healing is actually the not doing of anything, the stopping of doing things to it.
Stop.
If you can, you know, because I think a lot of people will actually get a lot better if they just stop doing the thing that they're doing. You know, for instance, if somebody's got a lip cancer because they smoke a pipe on that lip, you know, that part of their body every day, they're rubbing it down, they're continually damaging it. Just, you know, if you have to keep smoking, smoke on the other side, you know. It's like, put some variety in your life, because it's that habituation. And this is the prime example of how thought becomes a habit, which becomes a physical habit, which becomes a disease.
Right, exactly. And the way to transform that is to pause. So when you pause, you're stopping doing whatever it is you're doing. And then you have a moment to reflect and to witness. And then directions can be changed. It's not easy, of course, but it can happen. And, you know, and I think it helps sometimes to have people help each other out as well. A person can certainly heal on their own. You definitely don't need someone else, but it can make it a little easier.
So,
I find.
So that's interesting. So, there's a really unusual person in the chat room here. They've got an extra kidney and an extra nipple near their belly button.
Uh-huh. Could be a parasitic twin. Absorbed twin.
Interesting, because says maybe I was supposed to be twins, so perhaps so perhaps you are.
That's a phenomenon that happens.
Do you want to call in, talk about your unusual body parts, particles? I don't know, maybe you got a whole other person in there. So meanwhile,
that's definitely an interesting phenomenon.
So here's the thing, we got the crystallization arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
That's
ama in the joint.
Ama in the joints.
Yes. It's where ama relocates from the digestive system into the joints. Basically speaking. And there's different types of arthritis. Not just osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis. There's different types within that, depending on who the person is.
Okay, so
does that make sense?
Yeah, so because like you were saying that you know, we have different humors, different qualities of being. Like, you know, these are the qualities of the rays as well. So if I were to say, how would a first ray person get ill, would be a very sudden illness. A second ray person would get ill very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
A third ray person would probably, you know, bash around and damage themselves. Like,
so that's similar. I mean, yes, that's a similar way of looking at it then. So a person with a lot of air and ether, we are a combination of all of these qualities. So I'm giving you the basic kind of standard, just to give examples. But a person with a lot of air and ether, predominantly air and ether in their system, will tend to have dry, cracking, very painful joints if they form arthritis. So there'll be a lot of dryness and pain. And I know arthritis in general is painful, but I'm speaking in terms of different levels. Like, this will be very severe. A person who has a lot of fire will have a lot of redness and inflammation, a lot of heat, whereas the first person may have more coldness in their joints. And then finally, a third type of person who has a lot of earthiness to them will have a lot of swelling. Won't necessarily be red. It would just be sort of puffy and swelling, and their joints will be very immovable because of the swelling, and also rather cold. So there's, you know, there's different ways that it can manifest, that arthritis can manifest. And Ayurveda looks at arthritis so specifically as opposed to generally, and there's different ways to work with that. But before that happens, before arthritis, a person will feel discomfort in the joints, you know, prior to getting that deeper imbalance. And then, you know, there's things that you can do to help.
All right. So, you know, this is about the collection of what you call ama in the body, which mm-hmm. is some kind of, you could call it like a karmic thought, negative thought sludge that doesn't like to move, is very... and you could, you know, if you look at like modern drain pipes, you know, if you would take a drain pipe out of a house after 50 years, you'll see that it's got this kind of sludge buildup on the inside.
Yeah.
Much like what we get in our intestines and our bloodstream, you know, they call it cholesterol, but you know,
yes,
it's a collection of this very same material. It's the same concept, whether it's on a physical level or an emotional level. Is that right?
Right. And yes. And it's both within the body. It's both physical and emotional. And the drain pipe is definitely, it's just a reflection of what's going on in our bodies. So that's a good example. It's a good point. And it begins with thoughts, and it begins with our digestion. So very simple foundational physical practices, you know, either keeps our digestion optimal or doesn't, or creates imbalances. So, you know, you can think, a person who has experienced burning in their stomach eventually could get this type of burning inflammatory arthritis. But a lot of people don't notice that burning in their stomach because they're distracted by, you know, other things, drama, the drama of life. So drama is a very big distractor.
Talk about drama, please, because...
Okay, let's talk about drama.
It's the thing that people... Oh, I got my kettle boiling. It's the thing that people drive, you know, it drives their lives. Every day, a different drama. Every day,
yes.
You know, oh, pay me attention because, you know, this terrible thing happened to me. Talk about drama and you know, is it curable? Or is it just sociopathic that we just need to cut these people out of our lives?
Well, I think it can be a really great distraction. It's really, it's in some ways convenient, in some ways it's our habit to become attracted to dramas, the dramas of life. Because then we don't focus on what's happening within ourselves, which, you know, short term can be hard to deal with. So there's the basic qualities. There's three of them: Rajas, Tamas, and Sattva, or Sattva. Tamas is the state of inertia. Rajas is the state of action, and Sattva is a state of balance. And in Ayurveda, we all try to cultivate Sattva, so cultivate balance. And you can still go through life and experience life in the state of Sattva or Sattva, but you won't be as enmeshed in the dramas of life. You'll be able to be more of a witness. You can still participate, but you're not going to be as reactive to what other people say or do. It doesn't make you, it doesn't turn you into a zombie by any means. It's the opposite. You become very aware and involved in life, but you're not getting tugged around as much, if that makes sense. So I think drama is a huge distraction, but drama also... it's made up of our reactions to things. So it's how we react as opposed to responding to life. And people have different tendencies for how they will react. Some people will react with fear. So we talked about that whole issue with kidney stones. Often the basis of that can be fear-based. Not always, but often. Some people will react with anger. The fiery types will react with anger. And then some people will act with withdrawal or sadness or inertia. Those will be the more earthy type of people. So once you begin to recognize your own tendencies, oh, when a certain stress or drama appears in my life, I tend to respond this way. There's usually a pattern. I'm sure most of us can kind of think about a situation that occurs in our life that causes a lot of stress, and how did I respond, or how do I generally respond? And some people will be like, oh, I always get mad, you know, I just, or other people may say, ooh, oh, you have a temper, you know. Whereas another person might be like, oh, that I'm just, everything makes me nervous and anxious, and so they're more fear based. And then another person may not want to even deal with anything and not get involved and not respond at all, and just kind of withdraw and be a little bit melancholic and sad and heavy. So, you know, a good start would be to witness what are your own emotional tendencies, and kind of go from there. Not that you need to try to tam down your emotions, but it's good to start witnessing them. I don't know, JP, what's your tendency? What do you think?
I tend to stop. You know, if things get strange, I think, right, stop this, stop everything. You know, let's stand and,
okay.
You know, rather than getting pushed along by the flow, is like, okay, I'll stop. I'll step out of the flow and just take stock. That's how I cope with when things get weird.
So does that seem more like you're witnessing what's happening, or you're sort of withdrawing?
Depends who's saying. Yeah. Depends who's describing it, because it might be that you know, somebody's trying to provoke me into engaging in some way. In yeah. which case, I'm witnessing.
Yeah.
You know, or somebody's triggered an emotional reaction in me, and in which case I'm withdrawing. Yeah.
Right. And then do you stay? Well, see, I don't want to like get into your how you are personally too much, but I tend to respond with more of the fiery emotions. You know, although I've gotten a little bit better at witnessing, you know, not just reacting. So, like your knee-jerk reaction, and this could have happened more, JP, when you were younger. I have a feeling now you witness more than you react. That's just my sense.
Yeah. Well, it's mostly, so like, mostly, say when you were sadness and disappointment.
Really? Okay, so the heavier.
What you call phlegmatic or melancholic?
Yeah, sure.
I would say I'm more phlegmatic than melancholic, because ice cream cheers me up. Bagels cheered me up. You know, that's a phlegmatic thing. You know, they like, and that's a second rate quality as well.
Interesting. Like, would you like to just like cozy up on the couch? You know, kind of like just sit there all comfortable, as opposed to like trying to solve whatever drama is occurring.
Walking out in the rain, in the wind, does not do it for me. Yes. Give me a blanket and a dark room.
And a bowl of ice cream.
And a bowl of ice cream and a bagel sitting on top with it.
Yeah, bagel on Sunday. I guess, so for me, if I was reacting to a drama as opposed to responding or witnessing, I would tend to get angry and want to fix it. I'd want to problem solve. So with practice, you know, try to get more into stepping back before I react to something. And it definitely takes practice. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I thought you have a longer answer than that. And I just went to get my cup of tea. I'm starting to flag out. It's now, what is this? This is hour six.
Sorry. I'm so sorry. Okay. I can definitely think for examples of like dramas and reactions. So everyone experiences drama. I mean, it is definitely a part of life, engaging in life. And it's just a matter to what degree are you going to keep engaging. I mean, a good example would be Facebook. That's sort of like the modern drama outlet. It's really riddled with provoking reaction. And it's definitely forming into a type of addiction, I feel, because... Oh, gosh, there's so many things on there. It doesn't matter what your viewpoint is. You know, it doesn't matter if your viewpoint is, universal and loving, it can still have a lot of drama behind it. You know, like if there's an event in your part of the country or world that's occurring, and then you react by posting something on Facebook, that's creating a type of drama. So it would be really, and that was very tempting for me at first when I first got onto Facebook, you know, to either post something really passionate. And I'm not saying people shouldn't have passion, but just take a minute. You know, just pause before you post something. So, yeah, I think that's something that it would be kind of maybe an interesting practice for everyone who uses Facebook. Take a look, go back to your own Facebook page and take a look at your posts and see if you can see the quality of your posts. Is it riddled with a lot of righteousness and passion and anger? Is it, you know, against whatever it is that you're responding to? Is it riddled with fear or things that cause fear and stress and anxiety? Or is it riddled with cute little kitties and videos of like baby puppies, you know, that kind of thing?
Mine's kind of sarcastic.
You know, it'd be really interesting. Yeah, well, kind of like witty, humorous. I think humor is good, you know, but just it would be interesting for people to take a look. If anyone's listening, go back to your Facebook page and see, go back to your own page, not your news feed. I think it's interesting we call it a news feed. It's like we're getting fed. This is definitely a way of creating AMA. Just go down Facebook and for a while and read everything, you know. And I do go on Facebook, so I'm not saying that I'm above any of that. I definitely participate. It's just an interesting practice to go back and look at your news feed and see what's on there, you know.
And this is all about knowing yourself, isn't it?
I think it's a good practice. Mm. And it's not like you want to be harsh with yourself. Just be like, oh, my tendency is definitely, oh yeah, there's a lot of like fear on there. Or like you said, there's a lot of sarcastic humor. So this is a reflection of a part of myself. It's just an interesting practice to get to know what's happening, you know?
And to get you, and particularly to get to know yourself. Know thyself is what we need to do.
Know thyself. Yes. And I wish, maybe there aren't many people listening in right now. It'd be really cool for people to go on their Facebook pages and just take a quick look and see what your feed is and maybe share that. If you're willing to do that, that would be interesting.
Right. Well, we've got a caller. Finally. Hello.
A brave soul.
A brave soul. Be prepared to be vivisected in the nicest possible way. Error code 805. Good afternoon. Who are you and where are you?
Hello. This is Deb. Gabrielle. How are you?
Oh, hi, Deb. How are you doing?
Good. How are you? I would have called in earlier, but I just had to lay down, so I was listening. And then, you know, I've listened to your guest before, and I love the information. And I just thought, well, you were asking for calls, and I had a little bit of sharing. Physically, if possible.
Go ahead.
Sure, great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, when we're talking about, it is the basics, a lot with the physical. I had so many physical problems, I mean, my whole life, especially like 14 on, and I just couldn't figure it out, and they told me lots of things. And then finally, one thing really helped the most. They found out I had apnea really bad when they used to think it was fibromyalgia, all these things. One night on that freaking breathing machine, and I couldn't believe it. And I've been on it about 3 years. I lost 50 pounds immediately, and it took about a year, and I was pain-free. I mean, I've done a whole bunch of other things, too, but that's the one thing. So just the oxygen, the breathing, and the deep breath. It's a miracle. So I wonder how many people aren't getting either one of those.
Well, I appreciate that that it's helped you so much. And kind of in conjunction with using that machine, there's I don't know if you've done any different type of breath work practices, but there are some practices that can that can help with that, that can help strengthen the muscles in your throat. And then I would also, I don't know if you've done this as well, but if you've considered doing, you know, maybe past life regression or...
I've been hung, I've been drowned, a lot of breathing.
So this is your set on fire.
this is your lifetime to enjoy your breath.
To really begin to take it all out.
Yeah. Enjoy life.
I mean, there is. So there is. There's breath work. Have you done breath work? Any pranayama?
No, I've done some yogic breath, and some of it has been very hard for me. And even when I do Reiki attunements, I still notice I don't breathe as deeply. But I'm an operatic singer, so it's kind of weird. But it's definitely my physical is slowly catching up, and now I'm working on the emotional too. So
yeah,
I guess
good
it's
for
just
you.
A process.
It sounds like you're building a really good foundation, though. You're taking care of the physical self to build enough strength to deal with the more subtle aspects.
Yeah, because I thought the physical was bad enough, and, you know, it totally obsesses you because you can't do anything if you don't have the physical. So I've got that going good, and now I'm like, oh, I think the emotional's harder. So that seems to be starting to clear up. So... And then there's the family stuff, so work on that a lot. So, but I appreciate all the information you're putting out, and JP puts out too, and with Anung, and all the different elements of it, because it's all part of it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but I like how you're recognizing that there is a connection between the physical self, and then you dig a little deeper, and then, oh, there's the emotional body, you know, kind of peeping its head out, and let's see how we can work with that, you know. But I'm so glad to hear that you've been feeling better the past 3 years. That's really great.
Oh, my gosh, day and night. Even my family, people that know me well, like, just can't believe it. But I know how I feel inside, and it's like freaking amazing. So compared to what has been, so I'm like walking around on cloud nine, even when I'm sad or even whatever. You know, I'm just thrilled. I didn't know it could be like this. I'm like, oh, this is what other people feel like. Oh, no wonder. I was barely making it for the first part of my life. So. Yeah.
It seemed like anyway. you weren't getting the proper rest, and that's a foundation.
It's
foundation for health.
Yeah. And they say a lot of people, even if they don't have breathing problems, they don't sleep enough. They don't get, you know, good sleep or anything.
Right. I mean, that's rampant. But you could consider looking up Ujjayi breath. The ocean breath.
Okay, how do you spell it? H-A-A, or how do you...
I believe it's U-N-J-A-Y-I. So...
The translation for that is ocean. Okay.
Ocean breath. It's a practice of yogic breathing. Yes, you slightly constrict
the opposite,
the throat
not
muscles.
A stroll, like you do it like in waves?
That's a different...
Is it the opposite?
That's a different pranayama, and that one is excellent. But this one is different.
Okay.
This is when you slightly constrict the throat muscles as you're taking deep yogic inhalations and exhalations through the nose. Yeah, and that's good to do with, you know, with a practitioner and someone who's going to be really sensitive to your past history of sleep apnea and any emotional memories that may come up for you, you know. That would be a good practice to consider along with it.
Thank you. I've never heard of that. I've done the alternate breath where they say like dolphin breathing, or I can't remember what they call it, but I've never heard of this one or even seen the word. So thank you. I definitely will look into that, and I've never done anything where you breathe and work with the throat, you know, other than singing when you work with the diaphragm. But I've So, okay, I will definitely look into that. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
So, well, thank you very much,
Deb. That's it. I don't want to... Yeah, thanks, JP. I'll let you guys get back to it. I just thought I'd call in real quick, and I must have needed to call in for that, so I will definitely look that up.
Great, thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Shilin, for that. And good night, Deb. So see you soon.
Okay.
So, bye-bye. Yes, indeed. Wow. What a day. What a night. Fantastic. So, yeah, in the last 15 minutes, have you been making a blog? Do you write articles or anything like that, Shilin?
I should because I think it'd be a helpful way for me to stay connected with people. I have a website, and I do send out a newsletter to my folks that have signed up for it. I tell you, having a little baby sure as heck takes a lot of time. I mean, I made a promise to myself that I would really devote a lot of my time to being there for my little baby girl. So blogs aren't really happening right now. But so I get a newsletter out about once a month. And whoever wishes to be a part of that can certainly go to my website or send me an email, and I can add them to that. I try not to send too many out, but I don't have
All
a
right.
blog.
So what's your website called?
Which one? I actually have numerous ones, but the main one would be my first name and last initial. So it's CHELYNNT at, oh, sorry, that's my website, shilint.com. I think my name is up on your site right now, so for the spelling. But yeah, it's shilint.com.
I'm just putting that in the chat.
But I also
room
have
now.
A photography site. You're what?
You take photographs as well. I have to say, you sent me this high definition photograph, and I just posted
it
on my page, and it's just like it's you know, really, really cool. And there you go, in your face. It's a very delightful photo.
Thank you.
So you so seem funny. To be able to take be either side of the camera, so that's quite great. That's very
well. I did those on a timer, so. Self-portraits, I guess you could say. But yeah, I first initially went to art school and studied photography and sculpture, so I have a photography practice as well, and I also make Ayurvedic equipment out of copper, so I do a little bit of copper smithing as well.
Ayurvedic?
Hang on.
What's that? Ayurvedic instruments with copper? What's that? What are these?
Ayurvedic equipment. Well, there's a lot of body therapies in Ayurveda that go along as part of the healing process. So there's a lot of different types of therapeutic massage, and there's one therapy that's called Shirodhara, oleation of the head. And you use a copper vessel. You pour herbalized oil in the vessel. It's warm. And so I make these copper stands that hold the vessel that hangs down and hovers over the patient's head as they're lying on the table. And they receive this treatment of a continuous stream of warm herbalized oil that kind of falls over their Ajna chakra, their third eye, and the crown of their head. And so I make the equipment via my sculpture background. And I thought of you, JP, because I used to make kinetic sculptures. So I got into electronics, and I used to do very simple circuitry and work with DC motors and stuff like that. So I love the idea of electronics and technology and art, but as you know, you can't do it all. Or maybe you can.
You're very seventh row. This is very exactly 127 things that you're doing there. You're talking about because the 127 as a healer heals through energies, right? And and through structure and through order and through architecture and device and gadgets and things. So you know you know and you've obviously you know you've not done that. I mean, you've done this stuff before. This is like you're almost okay, I'll just incarnate here and keep going kind of thing. You speak very fluently on it. It's like this is not a single lifetime kind of understanding that we're talking here. So
I realize that I'm
tapping on a very old way, an old frequency band here, you know, well established and understood. So
neat.
Yeah, I get you. So so basically you make a little tripod and you fill it with hot oil and it kind of drips on your head. Is this the idea of anointment? Is this what really anointing is about?
I suppose it could be, because there is another therapy that basically anoints the entire body. And the in Shiradhara, this treatment of oleation of the head, you're working with the koshas, which are these sheaths that project outwards from the physical body. So this oil actually penetrates these different sheaths and then hits the marma point at the third eye space. And I think we talked about it a little bit the last time, but it's in direct alignment with your pineal gland and your pituitary. It's right there, you know? If you think about your forehead and your bridge, the eyebrow ridge, and you just go up like one little finger width or maybe two finger widths above your eyebrow ridge, there's your third eye. And if you can kind of like go straight through your head, you're going to hit your pineal gland and your pituitary. So, yeah, anointing. Could be. What's your thought of on anointing?
Yeah, well, there's something about being covered in goose fat, but or crocodile, not goose fat, crocodile fat. That's the stuff. Mm-hmm. That apparently, you know, the holy anointing oil of the House of Israel thing is some crocodile fat. You know, oh, that's right. It was Egyptian. This is from the Egyptian thing, the anointed, which is Mashiach, which is Messiah. You know, so and Messiah means the anointed one, or the one covered in crocodile fat. Or whatever, you know.
Wow.
Maybe dipped or fried, or you know, or maybe a little copper thing boiled and then dripped on their head. What do you think?
And then you turn into a little French fry.
Reptile oil, fried in reptile oil.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, no, the oils that are actually there's more than just oil that's used, but sesame oil is used with different herbs that are cooked into it. And coconut oil is used, ghee is used, which is clarified butter. Sometimes milk is used. So those are different substances that are used for Shiradhara, depending on what's going on for the person. And it's used to alleviate anxiety and chronic headaches and sleeplessness. It's a really beautiful therapy, actually. Pretty much everyone could stand to use this treatment.
So it would you know, whatever it would you say that this ama, right? So if I wanted to get the grease out of my drain pipes, I would need to apply several solvents at different levels of the game, so to speak, because the stuff that is really kind of clinging to the walls of the pipe, that's like almost like tar, you know, it's that heavy. So
right.
I'm going to need some but I'm going to need to penetrate first, so I'm going to need to use one layer of a light of a kind of lighter oil or a petrol or something like that, which is a very light oil, and dissolve that away, and then mm-hmm. I'll need something heavier and then something heavier still to get down to the, you know, the real heavy duty degreasant. So when we're talking about ama, there are levels, there are layers, and there are treatments for each layer. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh, sure. So going back to oil, internal oleation is a treatment that's part of a treatment that's used to soften ama. So I think we talked about this process called Panchakarma last time, the five actions. And it includes, it's a huge cleansing and rejuvenation process of the body. And then since the body is connected to the mind and spirit, it helps everything, helps all aspects of ourself. So you go in and you internally oleate the body. So you ingest a good quantity of what we use is generally ghee. So, and often a ghee that is cooked with some bitter herbs. So it also helps to get the liver sort of cleansed out and functioning better. So ghee goes in and it can penetrate all the tissues of the body. So the fluids, the red blood cells, the muscle tissue, bone tissue, nerve tissue, fat tissue. It can penetrate all these tissues really easily and get to the ama. The ama that's kind of really deeply hidden and been there for a while. So that's sort of one of the first steps. But then you need to, you know, so that ama starts to soften the ama, and the ama then starts to get absorbed into the bloodstream and circulates around the body. And often a person won't feel wonderful during this part because the ama is on the loose, you know, it's circulating. But our body, if we give it the proper rest through having a mono diet, eating the same type of specific food for a number of days, then the body will have its energy to digest this ama and bring it to the GI tract to eventually be eliminated through other therapies, you know, such as Virechana, which is a purgation therapy. So yeah, there's many layers, and there's different lengths of time depending on how much ama a person may have or how much strength a person may have. So it can be quite involved. And then you can do some that are less involved but will still begin to help reduce ama in a person. That's where I work a lot with people in that phase, sort of like before the Panchakarma. Yeah. Maybe you should give it a whirl, JP.
you know, the one I think I picked up in it last time, but the purgation is, you call it the Varech, and it really makes it Varech, you know, that really sums up. I just really want to Varech about this. So, so Chéline Tétreau, thank you so much. And thank you, little baby, for allowing mummy to talk to us tonight. So thank you so much. And we'll be back in a few minutes' time with Frank Jordan and the Earth Mind Think Tank Group and their healings and meditations show. So,
thank you, JP, so much. It's been a pleasure and an honor.
It's been lovely. Thank you so much. I enjoy talking with you because, like I said, there's a tradition that you're tapped into that has a lot of wisdom that we really need now, because it takes a different view of medicine and integrates it much more into a spiritual life beingness, lifestyleness, that understands that it's all part and parcel of the same thing and everything's connected.
Great. Thank you for that encouragement. You're appreciate it.
So with that, I'll oh God, I forgot it. I'm always doing this stuff. I forgot my bumper. Hang on. Da-da-da-da-da. Ever beyond outro. There we go. So thanks, everybody. Stay tuned for Frank Jordan and the Earth Mind Think Tanks. I'm getting tired. It's been 6 hours. Good night. beyond.